fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Upgrade your kitchen today with Clearview Cabinetry. We offer a great selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and with cabinet accessories to match your unique style. View our selection of Clearview Cabinetry on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
You're tuned into SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Hit the lights. It's Sunday night. Welcome in to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network and proudly presented by Hewitt Domodurus Law, HDLawSC.com. Here for you, Brad and Dean are each and every week and every day in between the times when you get to hear about them here on SEC Sunday Night. Hewitt Domodurus Law is here for all of your personal injury needs, your insurance claims, your dog bites, your falls down the stairs. Whatever the case may be, you give them a call. They have won tens of millions of dollars for their clients, and they cover the entire state of South Carolina, and they love this state right here. Some of you are from around the Southeast, maybe around the country. You want some legal advice? I'd still probably give them a call. They'll be able to point you in the right direction. Hewitt Domodurus Law, HDLawSC.com. It is SEC Sunday Night. I'm Rob Williams. Craig McMichael, my co-host, sits there beside me on the edges of Detroit, Michigan. What's going on, my friend? How are we doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I've got my cowbell ready. I can't wait. I've got the Hail State ready to go. So ready to head to Stark Vegas tonight. Looking forward to it. The women have wrapped up their SEC tournament run. Looking forward to the men getting going this week as well.
Yeah, baby. It is tournament time, and it's Mississippi State night here on SEC Sunday Night. I'm glad that you mentioned that LSU takes down South Carolina today in dominant fashion, out to a 14-0 lead to start the game. After that 14-0 lead, the game was actually really competitive, and the scoring was pretty even throughout the rest of the game. But that 14 spot on multiple turnovers by the Gamecocks was all the edge that Texas needed. I just said LSU a minute ago. I'm not sure where that's.
I was going to say, did Auntie Kim kidnap you? I mean,
I'm looking at baseball. I'm looking at baseball on my television and thought LSU, Texas. All credit to Vic Schaefer and the Horns for getting it done in the women's bracket. The key to that is that they will stay home when we get to the Sweet 16. First two rounds are on campus. If you don't know. In the women's bracket, and so you do get home games in the NCAA women's tournament, and then when they move to the Sweet 16, we're in two locations, one in California in Sacramento, one in Fort Worth in Texas. UCLA is undoubtedly going to be in the California side, and this game today between Texas and South Carolina was really deciding who was going to get the number three overall seed, the third one seed, yep. And that will stay in Fort Worth, so Texas now will get to stay in their home state for much of the tournament. South Carolina likely getting that four overall seed, the fourth one seed, and heading out to California, given that they make it that to that point in the tournament. On the men's side,
Real quick, what's your thought on that? On that that home tournament for the NCAA tournament? Do you think that we could do that for the men?
Yeah, no. I think that we should do it for the men, but you and I both know that cash rules everything around me when it comes to the NCAA, and they can make more money at the many neutral sites that they have. They've had a successful model there, and I think that being able to kind of sell those packages in advance and not just having the stuff going on at the on campus. I would love to see it on campus for those higher seeds. Obviously, you're going to have multiple teams there, and so not everybody's going to get the home advantage. But yes, Craig, I would love to see that happen. They do try to get you within driving distance, and so that still maxes out their the dollars that are being made there. So I don't think it'll happen on the men's side, but you and I both are big proponents of that. Speaking of the men, here's the SEC tournament bracket. This begins in Nashville on Wednesday. We'll get started. Not the easiest path for anybody here. Florida now, according to Joe Lunardi today, moves into the one seed position. And so they are now that fourth one seed. We also saw Texas bump up to a 10 seed, which is important because it gets them out of that first four 11 seed play-in discussion. Auburn right now, the last team in after a loss to Alabama yesterday. The SEC still has 11 teams, Craig, as it stands right now. So really what that means is that this graphic that you see on your screen in the SEC men's tournament in Nashville is going to be very important if we're going to see a little shift in seeds here. Florida clearly in flux a little bit, right? Like they were able to jump up and get the one. You want to see them play well if they want to retain that, because obviously they're right there on that cut line between one and two. Auburn is the other big story for obvious reasons, a near 500 record and right in the thick of it to get into this tournament. And right now, like I said, Lunardi has them as the last team in. And so we will look to see what they can do in their opening matchup there.
So basically you win that first round matchup, you're probably almost guaranteed a spot in the tournament. Because Lenardi's talking about 11. That would get us to 12. See, I can do math unlike last
week. No. He's counting Auburn in the 11. Ugh. Yeah. Ugh. So a loss would get it to back down to 10. And yep. If you can't see the graphic on the screen, Auburn opens with Mississippi State.
Langer.
On Wednesday.
That's where did LSU finish this year?
Dead last.
Oh, wow. That's too bad. That's too bad. That's sad.
Speaking of LSU, we have a little news on the diamond to cover as well, as they are currently in the thick of a matchup with Sacramento State trying to win the series. They split Friday and yesterday. LSU scuffling a little bit, not really playing like the number two that they have beside their name. But we will see how they continue to play this game tonight. We'll kind of monitor as we go along. High Point was able to go into Gainesville and take a series from Florida this weekend. Texas baseball and Texas softball combined 37-1. Softball team came to Columbia and swept the Gamecocks this weekend. And then Texas baseball had USC Upstate. So a lot of South Carolina flavor with the Longhorns this weekend in the women's tournament and also on the diamonds. Baseball's run ruled six different teams. Softball has 11 run rules. 44.7% of their games run rules collectively between those two teams on the diamond. So doing really, really well.
What's that saying? Everything is bigger than in Texas.
Yep.
We've seen it in women's basketball. We're seeing it in baseball. We're seeing it in softball. We've got Arch at quarterback in football. I think there was an interesting talk, I believe it was on Andy and Ari this week. They were looking at like realignment and, you know, what teams have won, what teams have maybe lost. Actually, it might have been the College Football Inquirer. I think Stephen Godfrey got in on that one. But, you know, I think one of the biggest winners of you look at the recent memory, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Texas A&M. Texas are the big winners. I really feel that the SEC, combined with the leadership of Chris Del Conte, has been that nitrous oxide. And Texas has shown no growing pains whatsoever, unlike the Sooners and the Aggies, which continue to kind of flounder down there in College Station.
CDC is one of the most respected among those of us who are not hating him for a rivalry purpose. Athletic directors, not just in the league, but in the country. I think he's done a really good job of getting that program as a whole, as an athletic department, into a good position. So, Craig, tonight we are talking about Mississippi State. And those are your highlights, by the way. Men's basketball projections. We've got the women's tournament ending today. Obviously, some implications there, as we mentioned. And then the baseball highlights. Again, LSU in a game against Sacramento State, looking to win the series. South Carolina going for the sweep against Princeton. All the other games, I believe, are finished up for the weekend. And we gave you the highlights there in our scores around the league. It is time, though, tonight, Craig, for us to turn to Starkville. We had Paul Jones with us from Maroon and White Daily to talk about the expectations of what's going on with Jeff Lebby and this Bulldogs team. This is SEC Sunday Night. It is 10 after 8. And if you're just joining us, it's Hail State Night. We're going to talk to Paul Jones right after this. And we'll be back with message boards, record predictions, and more.
This is SE. With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
DC, Sunday night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law. We are now joined by Paul Jones of Maroon and White Daily as we jump into the Mississippi State preview. Craig and I will predict the schedule at the end of the show tonight. But before we do that, we need to get ourselves and get you guys informed a little bit more. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
It's great to have you as we look forward to the football season. It's crazy to think that in March, as basketball is raging, baseball is in full swing. I saw a 26-0 win by the Bulldogs the other night. And even with those sports at their full height, the SEC appetite for football is still there year-round. And as we look at spring ball getting going around the league, the questions begin to pop up about what's going to go on this year. And so Craig and I every year kind of make our way through one week at a time, and we look at these schools and these programs, and we make some predictions about the upcoming season just to see how correct we can get it here in the early spring. So obviously big moves happening in the offseason on the coaching staff, not as recent as Brent Pry at Virginia Tech, but you did bring Arnett back as the defensive coordinator there in Starkville. Big move for Lebby. What are your thoughts on the coaching staff as a whole? Other moves that may have been under the radar, but that Zach Arnett thing really sticks out to me. How does that fit with this new regime?
You know, I think it's Lebby's made some positive moves in that area. Obviously, getting Arnett back, an experienced defensive coordinator, probably a move he should have made last year. Probably shouldn't have brought Coleman Hutzler back after he had such a terrible first season. Most guys wouldn't have brought him back, but Lebby did, thinking he could increase the talent and Hutzler would be better, but obviously that wasn't the case. But Arnett knows Starkville, knows Mississippi State, knows the talent, and, you know, they brought in a lot of Florida State transfers this year, four or five guys, I believe, on the defensive, most on the defensive side of the ball. And Arnett was an analyst at Florida State last year, so he knows what those guys are about. But I thought he also made some positive moves on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, one thing that Levy was lacking on his staff was head coaching experience, and you get that with Phillip Montgomery from Virginia Tech, a guy that, you know, obviously was the interim head coach at Virginia Tech when they made a move there. But he was the head coach at Tulsa, and ironically enough, he was the head coach when Mississippi State and Tulsa had that brawl when Mike Leach was the head coach after the game. And then he brought in a guy that he's actually been trying to hire for several years now, and that's Kevin Johns to coach. You know, he coached the quarterbacks, and Kevin is a well-known assistant in the SEC and in Power Four. And you know, I think both of those were good moves on the offensive side of the ball for sure. But you know, I think a lot of eyes are on Arnett. Because as they've got to fix that defense. You know, Levy's offense was good enough to win several more games than they did last year, but that defense just really didn't give them a fighting chance.
How has the reception been from, like, the Mississippi State fans and stuff like that with Arnett coming back? I know it was – he sort of was thrust into that role after Leach passed away tragically, and kind of was – think we could all say it was safe to say it was fair and over his head, but obviously defense is his calling card. Has there been a pretty positive response back? To me, it's wild. You know, we saw that Rob mentioned at Virginia Tech, these guys coming back relatively quickly.
It has. And, you know, I think one reason for that is because of how bad the defense has been. Maybe there would have been more question marks and, you know, maybe there would have been more hesitance from State fans bringing Arnett back. But I think he's been full 100% on board. And I think it's just because of how bad the defense is, and they're hoping to get it fixed. And they know Arnett's track record of being a pretty solid defensive coordinator.
Yeah,
you
mentioned
if you had not had that, if you had not had that and you had a decent defense and you had your defense coordinator moving on and you replaced with Arnett, there may be a few more question marks. But I think fans are loving the move that he's coming back just so he can hopefully fix the defense.
Yeah, I really love the move too. And I was a little higher on Mississippi State last year than maybe some others just because I was able to – if you look at the roster and you look at what Levy's system is going to do, I think there's enough talent to steal some wins that maybe people aren't expecting the Bulldogs to get. And now if you bring Arnett back, which brings a more solid defensive, not just a system, but a reputation. And he kind of, like you said, he not only knows the league, but he knows the city and he knows the school and he knows what type of talent is going to work there, especially on the defensive side of the ball. It does give a little bit of a better outlook moving towards 2026. You mentioned track records, and Jeff Levy has a track record of being able to produce high level offense and other stops where he's been and the other coaching groups that he's been a part of, coming obviously out of that Bryles tree. Talk a little bit about what this roster looks like and how it has continued to shape up. We know that after Mike Leach passed away and Arnett took over, there was a change of offensive philosophies, which caused years of shakeup in terms of the personnel on this roster to kind of fit the system. Now Levy is kind of, I feel like, gotten more of his guys back into the system with the help of the transfer portal. And Kamario Taylor is a kid that I really love, and I'm excited to see what happens with him in 2026. Who's on this roster that sticks out to you? Maybe some names that people are familiar with that are going to have breakout seasons, or even those that the average SEC fan would not be thinking about that could be a star for this Bulldogs team this year.
You know, I think he's improved the talent every year, and I think he's done that again, you know, this offseason, like so many other teams in the SEC. It's going to come down to the trenches on both sides of the ball. How good can they be up front? And that's particularly true on the offensive line. That is the biggest question mark. Obviously, people know about Kamario Taylor and his future and how bright it is. You got Fluff Bothwell back, running back. He was banged up last year, still had over 500-600 yards rushing, but he's a solid running back. who could do a lot more if he's healthy, and now he is healthy, but he needs a healthy season. I really love the addition of Marquise Johnson from the transfer portal. There's no denying that Lebby loves speed at wide receiver, and he's going to get speed. He's going to take speed over everything. You know, we saw that last year. He took a guy like Brendan Thompson, who had 9 catches the previous season, and then he comes in at Mississippi State system, and he sets a school record for receiving yards. And Brendan has shot his way up the NFL draft boards. And, you know, this offense under Lebby, I'm not saying you can just get trash at receiver and, you know, guys with not much talent, and they're going to succeed. But, man, this offense is going to produce receivers, and it's going to produce big numbers for receivers. And I think Marquise Johnson is going to be that guy for them this year. Obviously, another guy that put up good numbers last year that's back is Anthony Evans. He's another guy that hardly did anything in Georgia, comes in at Mississippi State and has 800-something receiving yards. I think he was their leading receiver in catches. Just a guy that went off in the system, and a lot of us got to do, like I said, with Levy's system. You know, up front, Cannon Boone, center, got another year. We'll see if he stays at center or moves back to guard. They brought in LSU transfer center DJ Chester. DJ has played all over the offensive line for LSU, but he seems to be better on the interior. So whichever one of those guys doesn't win the center job will probably be starting at guard. But that offensive line is going to be the number one key for them. They've got to be better up front than they were last year. And they've got to keep Kamario Taylor healthy. That's first and foremost for the season, because if Kamario can have time to do things in the pocket, he can be a special player. He's one of the most gifted athletes I've ever covered at Mississippi State. And, you know, fortunately for me, he grew up right down the road. So I saw Kamario a lot in high school. And he's just one of the most talented kids, maybe the most talented quarterback I've ever seen come through to Mississippi State. For him to reach his potential, though, he's going to have that offensive line at least be average.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that when you talk about fluff, I think that at the running back position, that's the one that I have my eye on. You're right. This offense is obviously going to produce receivers, and you expect it to kind of move, and you're going to throw the ball. But we've seen this happen, whether it was with Lane Kiffin or other guys that are from this – kind of from this tree and running something that moves a little quicker. If you don't have some type of balance and run the football in the SEC, a lot of times it can get you into trouble. And so I would really expect him to carry a little bit more of a load. Like you said, banged up last year, had high expectations for him. I'm excited to see exactly how healthy he is and what that looks like. And we know how it is every year. I don't want to put anything on him, you know, knock on wood here, but this is every team and every star in the SEC. At the running back position, it's difficult to stay healthy the whole year. And so I hope that he can stay healthy throughout the year so we can kind of see his numbers translate after transferring to Starkville last year. I would love to see a little more balance there. Paul, let's talk a little bit about the expectations here, because every fan base is a little bit different. Every team has a different high watermark, and every coach is in a different stage of the ever-evolving carousel and hot seat and back and forth it goes. And the seats get hot a lot faster in 2026 than they used to. When you look at this schedule for Mississippi State, it is a deadly month of October. Absolutely terrible. When they start the month on October 3rd, they have Alabama, then they have an off week, and then at LSU, then they host Oklahoma, and then they go to Texas on Halloween. That's going to be a tough stretch for any team in this league. When you look at this year and the expectations around Jeff Lebby's team, what is the number of wins that they need for this community, this fan base, this administration to consider this to be a winning and successful season?
You know, I'd probably put the number at 7. You know, if you win 6 games and barely get into a bowl game again, that's not going to do anything for the fan base. and they'll probably be mad that Lebby comes back. And, you know, for his job, he's got to win at least 6 or 7, in my opinion, and get to a bowl game. You know, that schedule is always going to be tough. It is the SEC, but, you know, can they reach that 7? You know, that's a good question. Obviously, the schedule you mentioned, they better pick up wins on the front and back half because it's going to be hard in that middle that you just pointed out. But, you know, you look back at last year, a team that won 5 games, but it was also a team that blew, and I mean blew, opportunities to beat Texas and to beat Florida. And, you know, there was one more in there, Tennessee.
Tennessee.
You know, Tennessee. Yep. They had them beat. They had Texas beat. They had lining up for a last-second field goal at Florida and throw an interception on the last play of the game. So that's 3 games that you should have won last year. So that's a team that should have won 8 games last year, but you didn't. And, you know, can you make those right calls at the end of the game? Will your coaching hires you made put you over the edge and give you that opportunity to make the right calls at the end of the game? Because that's what it comes down to. I mean, let's be honest, guys. SEC, the margin for error is so thin, and it comes down to who makes the right calls in the fourth quarter so many times. I mean, yeah, we've got elite teams in the SEC, but that number is getting farther and fewer between. And on game day, it's going to come down to who makes the calls in the fourth quarter to win a game. And you know, that's, you know, you look at State playing a South Carolina team. That's early on in the season. That's probably going to come down to a fourth quarter game. And who makes the right call, who pushes the right buttons at the end of the game is going to be the winner. But, you know, I think 7 is the number for Lebby if I had to put a number on it right now.
Yeah, you look at last year, you know, you bring up the margins of victory. In the SEC in 2025, the margins of victory were less than 10 points a game. It was closer than, you know, what the NFL was. And now, you know, we've made the brilliant idea of going to a 9-game schedule. Plus, you know, you've got Minnesota in the 9-conference, which I think is an interesting thing. PJ Flex got some interesting pieces in that. But I want to talk about that team just a little bit to the north of you. You know, Lane Kiffin took up a lot of oxygen while he was the head coach at Ole Miss. Old Lane is now gone. I guess he went to Baton Rouge or somewhere. I don't know. I heard something about it. But what do you see for this rivalry coming up now with Pete Golding taking over at Ole Miss? Where is that opportunity for Coach Lebby?
I mean, I think he's got an opportunity to actually make a dent in the rivalry, if you will. I don't think it's been much of a rivalry since Kiffin's been there. You know, Leach got him before he passed away his last game, and that's been it. You know, it's been a pretty lopsided rivalry, if you will, and the normal trash-talking, toxic, whatever you want to call it, really hasn't been there with the rivalry because one side has nothing to talk about, and Mississippi State's had 0 to talk about in that rivalry. And I mean, they haven't even been, you know, really close games. And it wasn't, you know, obviously that was going to be marked up as Kiffin's last game at Ole Miss was the Egg Bowl, and that game really wasn't that close. You know, it started out pretty decent, but you know, at the end, it wasn't that close. You know, we'll see how Golding does. This league is unforgiving for inexperienced head coaches, so we'll see how he battles that situation. But Ole Miss still has talent, still has roster, and they still have obviously they get to host the Egg Bowl, so that's a big thing this year. It's in Oxford, but there's still a talent, you know, issue there for Mississippi State in the rivalry. Ole Miss still. You know, if Chambliss is able to play and Chambliss gets through all the NCAAs coming after him, we know all of that story. But if he is back, you're talking about one of, if not the top quarterback in the country. So Ole Miss still has a very talented roster. I don't know if Lebby can put a dent in that rivalry this year. It's going to be interesting from a talent standpoint. I do think coaching is huge. I think Lane Kiffin is one of the best coaches in the country, and I don't know. I think you lose something, obviously, when you lose your best head coach in history. You have to take a step back, likely, in that. But that talent's probably going to keep Ole Miss ahead in that rivalry.
Absolutely. Great stuff here from Paul Jones, Maroon and White Daily. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. And appreciate the insights and breakdown of the roster there, as it will help me a little bit as I try to pick these games a little bit better than Craig, so my percentage can continue for the third year in a row to beat his when we get to the fall and see what this looks like. Thanks again for being with us. This is Paul Jones here on SEC Sunday Night, joining us to discuss Mississippi State and what we're looking for in 2026. Paul, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Paul.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
We'll be right back after this on SEC Sunday Night.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team.
Oh, man. The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete, recovering from injury, or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up? Baby, let's go!
This is SEC Sunday Night on the Chiefs Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chiefs Sports Network and proudly presented by Hewitt Diamandouros Law, hdlawsc.com. I do want to mention here, Craig, before we get into our discussion, because I know there's some people that are watching live SEC sports right now while we are also on the air. And if you do have dual screens up, bravo to you. A little baseball action happening right now. Number two, LSU looking to take the series over Sacramento State. They are down 2-0 in the top of the sixth. South Carolina looking for the sweep against Princeton in the middle of a massive third inning. Bottom of the third here in Columbia. Gamecocks are up 6-1. Bases loaded, no outs.
What's wrong with LSU? Aren't they like number two in the country?
They are. They are. I've mentioned that a couple times here tonight that they are, but they're not really playing like number two.
Well, they're playing like number two, just not the rankings, you know.
Yeah, that's
we'll keep clever. We'll keep it PG. Clever. We'll keep it PG on for the kids toes. And the SEC pretty folks.
On your toes. On your toes. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's not panic time because way too early in the baseball season, but there is for the casuals. for the casuals, there's people panicking, and you want to draw a lot of attention early on at this point in the year. This is not the type of attention they really need to be drawing, given the midweeks that they've dropped and now on in dangerous territory to
Mac Juggernaut, Sacramento State. By the way, fun Sacramento State fact for you. Loved our interview on Hail State. Jaden Rashada will be making his appearance at his third SEC school. Started out at Florida, then they forgot to pay him his NIL dollars.
Does that even count? Did he make it to Florida? Does that count as an appearance? Was he there? He wasn't there yet, right?
Yeah, he was there for like, I think he was there for a cup of coffee. He may have.
I don't think he ever made it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he did play a year. Maybe he was there for a year.
He didn't play a year. I think he was in class for like a week.
I've lost track.
He went to Arizona State.
He's been in the league for so long.
Then he went to Georgia. I don't think he got above 4-string at Georgia. He went to Sacramento State. Now he's at Hail State. Hey, where's he going to be next year? TJ Finley wannabe.
Well, because, you know, in a world of college football, Craig, where it's hard to enforce any types of rules, I know that you want to have a bit of a discussion here. I'm going to go ahead and bring Casey into this discussion. Because Casey is an umpire, and I feel like we may need somebody between us. So, Casey, I'm going to move you over there right in the middle. As U.S. President Donald Trump hosted a roundtable comprised of 50 or 60
square
people made up of former
coaches. How this is going.
Former coaches, politicians, network executives, conference commissioners, etc.
College athletes? Any current or previous college athletes?
No college athletes. And Craig, I'll give you the first word because I know that you are just bubbling to get something out here before we get to the serious stuff and make our way over to genius.
Yeah, we should stop wasting our time. Yeah, please, thank you. Thank you. I will say sir because I always address the officials as sir or Mr. Cregan, I would say. Yes, I am damaged. This was a waste of time. It was nothing more than a performative act from Washington, D.C. Oh, the sky is falling. Can we please get some help? Oh, my goodness. Nick Saban was there, and he was crying. He's like, you know, my sweet Alabama, we were so good. And then everybody got to do NIL and the transfer portal, and he tucked his tail, and he went to College Game Day. Can we stop with this and, like, trying to say, like, oh, my gosh, President Trump, Congress, please fix our sport. Our sport is just fine. Look at the ratings. Is it a little dysfunctional? Is it a little screwed up? Absolutely. But guess what? I'm a podcaster on Sunday night about the SEC. I like when the sky is falling. I like a little chaos. So save me the drama. Save me going to cry for some 40-person square table discussion. It's not going to happen. It's not going to get fixed. It's going to be okay.
Ross Dellinger put it as that President Trump was looking to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yes.
And obviously that can't be done. It can be. And Ross so eloquently put it that you could cut the end of the toothpaste tube off and put the toothpaste back in there and then glue it back together. But it's not as functional as it was beforehand. And I think that would be the case if we did try to put the toothpaste back in the tube in college football. However, the positive that I will say that came out of this roundtable or square, Craig, as you called it.
It was square. I saw the pictures. I saw Ross's pictures.
I do think that there needed to be attention on the state of college athletics in Washington, D.C. Because we have proven the NCAA has no teeth, and we've also proven that the conferences themselves cannot and will not, because of differing motives and self-interest, get on the same page, which means we're going to continue to go down this trail. And while I agree with you that the ratings are astronomical, I don't think the ratings are a general indicator of what's best for the sport. The ratings are an indicator of what's best for those who stand to make money in the networks and even the college football programs. But the college athletics as a whole are not just a reflection of the college football ratings, that doesn't mean that it's a positive standing for everybody involved. So I do think there needs to be some type of guideline that has a little bit of teeth that has to be put in place. And
who's
I think
going
anybody
to enforce this?
Well, this is
who's
what I was going to say. This? Anybody who has a grand illusion that there was going to be some magical thing that came out of this roundtable that gave us a clear-cut solution is actually they belong on the message boards that we're about to read, right? They're a little delusional. However,
yeah. So was everyone at that square table delusional?
I think that sharing information and pointing out the issues to a room of politicians who are, to be quite honest, removed and don't understand the issues. So trying to get people in the room who can speak directly to the issues, and I'll back up your point that maybe some current athletes or coaches may have been beneficial, those who are in the middle of it. While I do think that Nick Saban and Urban Meyer bring a fair perspective, they are both out of the game.
Pause. So Mr. Referee, I need a timeout. Okay, hang on. Ready? You want to hear this fair and balanced?
Off. I'm in the middle of a diatribe and I've been cut off.
I get
off.
It, but do you want to hear this fair 30 seconds diatribe? This fair things? Nick Saban. How does anyone talk about getting education anymore? Nobody talks about it. It's the most important thing which any of these student athletes can do in terms of enhancing their future. In this current system we have, developing players became impossible to do because people, instead of making decisions about creating value for their future, they're making decisions about how much money they could make at whichever school they could go to or transfer to. Did you tell that to Lane Kiffin, Nick? I don't think so. And then third, we need to develop an effective system of revenue sharing, authentic name, image, and likeness. Authentic being you have marketing value, which now we have collectives, which create opportunities, which become pay for play. Nick, stop it. Okay. It was all good when you could maybe or maybe not, you know, harness a bunch of talent on your own roster by whatever means necessary. But then when everybody else could do it, all of a sudden we're worried about education. Stop it. Please.
I do think he's spot on when he says that you can't develop players. You absolutely can't. I've worked with.
Cincinnati's developing players. Kirby's still developing players. I think they're okay.
And you see, nobody's talking about Georgia, and that's part of the reason why. And we had this conversation with, I think it was Jonathan Williams, or maybe it was John Smith. Anyway, yeah. One of those guys mentioned Kirby's second year rule about NIL, where you have to kind of come in and do exactly what Nick Saban was saying, is that you have to prove your worth. Essentially, you're going to get some money in your first year, but there are certain marks that you have to hit in order to access that full NIL value. In other words, you have to actually have an NIL value before they're going to pay you the big bucks at Georgia. And I think that is a good structure. And Kirby can do that because of the success that he had at Georgia with back-to-back national championships. But the further that we get away from that, the more you're going to see him start to bend as well. We already know that he bends the rules when it comes to his players breaking the law and being able to get on the field. And there's a lack of discipline in that way. And we'll get to that in just a moment.
We will.
Everybody.
Lack of institutional control, Robert.
In Ann Arbor, my friend.
Everybody has. Everybody's going to have their flaws and the ways that they're bending the rules. But I've worked with high school athletes for the past 12 years, and many of them have gone on to play in college sports. And I've been able to observe the shift over time. Let's take NIL and the transfer portal out of it for just a minute, and let's just talk about the general shift in a ever decreasing attention span of young people because of the social media aspect that is in their lives and short form media that is fed to them, that then has really propagated this lack of delayed gratification for anybody. It's instant gratification for everybody. And when we then introduced money and an opportunity to jump ship from via the portal from place to place, when you meet any type of adversity and difficulty, which, by the way, is what used to help guys develop both not only physically, but mentally and emotionally, so that they could build resilience and be productive members of society and take things away from sports that help them when they face difficult things in life. Now we've introduced a world where, hey, we're going to pay you, and that reduces your motivation to actually come in and work hard because we prepaid you. And then you can jump.
Such a tired trope. They're not going to work hard you can get paid.
And then you can jump ship if you don't start, or if it's too difficult, or if you have a disagreement with a coach. If you can't overcome the obstacle in front of you, then just run away and go find an easier path. That is kind of what we've created, and it does create a lack of development.
Did anyone bring up in the square table about coaching buyouts and spending $200-some million on this stuff, where coaches leaving teams that are in the college football playoff to go somewhere else within their own conference? Was that an issue, or is it just the players' problem?
No, and well, the issue is we don't have buyouts for the players because they're not employed, so we can't do the buyouts. And so the players can just jump in the middle of the year, at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, out of season, in season, once they've come to campus and attended some classes and, you know, gotten a girlfriend and signed up for a meal plan and checked into their apartment and moved their stuff in, and another coach can just call them and yank them away, right, Casey? And they can just go to another school before they've ever touched the field. It doesn't matter. We've signed up. We're here. We're on campus. We're enrolled. Nope. Can still get pulled away. But to your point, Craig, it did get brought up. One of the commissioners, I don't remember if it was the American Conference commissioner or if it was Jim Phillips.
Oh, I'm sure everyone was paying attention to the American Conference
who actually brought up your point that the financial piece of the college football world in general and the amount of money that's not only being generated but then spent on college football is now draining other Olympic sports. So it was brought up. Fantastic. I think the biggest thing, honestly, is that there needed to be some type of conversation outside of the sports people, because somebody that can make something move, whether we believe they'll get it done or not, and I think we can agree that we don't really think they're going to get anything done.
Oh, no, we can definitely agree. I definitely do not believe that.
But they do have some power to get something done, and there's zero chance of it ever happening if they're out of the loop.
This is like in morality class, like the power versus authority. I may have the power to do something, but really, do I have the authority to do it? I totally digress. Obviously, you see where I stand, and you see what a freaking clown show that I think
the most important things that came out of it, and if you read Ross Dellinger's piece, he kind of outlines a couple of things here. Had a bipartisan bill that was being negotiated across the street while this roundtable was happening that could change the negotiation of revenue and how that is divvied out, and then also the discussion surrounding the SCORE Act, which I think the biggest thing that came out of that for me is that all the college administrators said that this was the priority, was figuring out a way to get the SCORE Act pushed through, which would give theoretically give some teeth to the conferences and to the NCAA to enforce some rules. There is some back and forth there about whether or not that takes away employment rights on one side of the aisle, or should we push it through on the other side of the aisle. So we'll see how that continues to develop. It's 8:46 here on SEC Sunday night, and we've got a loaded boat for Casey as he makes his glorious return. The esteemed and talented and accomplished award-winning producer of the Message Board Genius podcast is back here with us tonight to tickle our ears with his sultry voice as he reads to us.
Tickle our ears. Grab your coffee, everybody. Casey's about to tickle our ears.
The adjectives that are flying are greater and greater every week. And faker.
As he reads to us about what's happening across the league in the SEC via our friend MBG.
Yes, my friend and yours, MBG says, Tennessee lost to Vanderbilt. Southern Vol says, what? We should never lose to Vandy, especially in Knoxville. We are the University of Tennessee. I don't know why he's yelling there. That means something.
What is he accomplishing with this? What is he accomplishing here? Okay, I'll let you get through them all.
Yes. Go Big Orange 82 says, Danny White doesn't care as long as ticket prices are high and crowds are sold out. Smokey's Howell was responding to Russell Ball, who said, what do you not understand? Tons of things at play. but they have enough money to be competitive in every sport. Can we stop with this? He says, no, we can't. That's a program we should never flat out lose to across the board. I don't care about what's at play or how much money they spend. We should always be better. And then finally, Vol for Life says, LOL, being punked at home by Vandy in the Big Two. Gross year of sports. Think they'll lower tickets for this horrendous product we've endured this year? I think there's a talent fee, isn't there? I think they're going to add to the talent fee.
There is indeed a talent fee.
This does hurt my heart, though, because you know who my favorite college basketball coach is in the country. So Rick, I didn't like reading these. Yeah.
It's okay. Have you ever lost to Vanderbilt, Casey?
Has Clemson ever lost to Vanderbilt? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in baseball.
Yeah. Never lose to Vanderbilt. Why can you never lose to Vanderbilt? Just because they like to study?
Smart kids can win too.
Well, honestly, in all fairness, we've had this discussion about money. Vanderbilt puts a lot of money into baseball, but traditionally,
they did.
I feel like it's
getting a little. Well, here's what I was going to say: is like they don't have a ton of money, as much as you would think. Like it's a private school. It's a small alumni base, right? Like. It's an SEC school. We get it. Like, they have money comparatively speaking. But if you look at the SEC, they just don't have as many people to pull from to be donors to give to that program. And they have funneled that money to baseball. Now they've tried to even it out a little bit, and things have changed for that baseball program. And I saw your comments earlier, Casey. I'll throw this one up here as we're talking about Vanderbilt. A better question about SEC baseball is Tim Corbin washed. Ha ha.
But, I worked with old Tim Corbin at Clemson, so I do know the man.
You
could lose to them in baseball. No. I was just going to say, Tennessee has put more money into football and basketball than they have. It's inevitable. Mm-hmm. Like, it's undoubtedly they've shoveled way more money into it than what Vanderbilt has, and you lose, and that's where these fans are frustrated. And honestly, we say a lot about, like, the passionate fan bases in the SEC, and sometimes they say deranged, delusional things. But in this case, like, this first guy that was up here, Junior, Southern Vol.
As
we should never
Northern
lose
Vol.
To Vandy. We're the University of Tennessee. That means something. You know what? He's right. That's the
what
flat
does
out
it mean? What does it mean though? Like so. I guess here's my question: Is Tennessee the most tortured fan base? Now we've looked and your poor Gamecocks, they put up the stat. I think ITG put up the stat this week, 15-71 in football, men's basketball and baseball
since January 1st of 2025. That is correct.
Yeah. So it's been rough, and I feel for you, buddy. Casey and I both want to let you know, Rob, we're here for you, and Casey, like, will let you drink from his cup. I mean, he's a guy like, you know, look at, it's a great cup there. You can drink from that cup. But is Tennessee
always sideways noted, right? I know you can tell, but it's always sideways when I come on this show.
It's perfect. You're a respectful man. You're a respectful man. But I guess my question is Tennessee the most tortured fan base? They want to be more, but they're always kind of left holding the bag. Well, maybe not even holding the bag because tickets are so much with this talent fee.
I don't know.
Is there a talent fee for basketball?
That's a good question. I actually don't know the answer to that question.
That's a serious question.
Sorry, I asked.
Yeah, no, seriously. No, I don't know.
I figured you would.
There is.
I will ChatGPT it.
Given that's not going to work. Let's move on to bigger and better things. Actually, I'm going to save that one for just a minute. Let's go here first.
All right. My friend and yours, MBG, says this Florida fan is concerned that John Summerall's voice is affecting his ability to coach. Gator Dad 78 says concerns about Summerall's voice. Not sure about y'all, but I've been absolutely juiced about the notes and Twitter clips I've seen from practice so far. So much energy and intensity. I do have one concern, though. Does Summerall do too many podcasts? He sounds extremely hoarse in every clip I see of him, and I'm starting to wonder if that affects his ability to coach guys on field. How does a player get better if they can't hear or understand their coach? Coming off such a sad run of seasons, I'd just like to see the on-the-field product before we go doing podcast after podcast. Someone once told LeBron to shut up and dribble, so maybe we should tell Sumrall to shut up and coach. Just my two cents.
Do you ever talk to your coach?
He would get changed. Note to self. My two cents.
Note to self. Don't put in a request with the SID at Florida about John Sumrall. We're cutting him off. No more podcasts. No more media availability. We may not even see John Sumrall all spring, according to this fan. If this fan gets to the athletic department in Gainesville, then we're not going to hear from John Sumrall throughout spring practice. Keep him away from the facility in Gainesville. We want to talk to John Sumrall. We need to hear from him. We want to hear who's winning the quarterback battle in spring, John. We need to know. Keep this guy on the mic. Get this message board poster far, far away from John Sumrall.
Before I talk to you about John Sumrall, real quick, the 10% fee is added to the University of Tennessee. Basketball prices actually went up 6% this year. So roughly, basketball prices went up about 16% for the Volunteers fans. So thank you, Chatty G, for that. But, you know, speaking of which, my voice always, like, at the start of the season when I was coaching, always kind of, like, had to have an acclimation period. I don't know if you need this or not, Casey, but, like, you're getting yelling, you're talking, you're going through a lot. The voice will kind of – you lose your voice, and then you gain back your coaching voice, and you're ready to go. And I think that's all John's doing. That's why he is podcasting. He's in his training camp. You know, shout-out to our friends over at High Top Sports. They had John on the show. John is definitely winning the offseason, I think, of the four SEC coaches that were hired. He has gotten definitely the most publicity. I think we're going to have the highest expectations of him. But I would say keep talking. Keep selling your program. That's what the money's for, my friend.
All right, we've got some boards now that are going to take us to the plains. But before we get there, I want to give a quick update. It is 7-1 Gamecocks in the bottom of the fourth over Princeton. And in the top of the seventh, Sacramento State now leads number two LSU 5-0 in Baton Rouge.
Not great, Bob.
All right. Let's jump up to lacrosse,
South Carolina. You can't beat Princeton in men's lacrosse, right, Craig?
There it is. Right. I thought we were going to go all night without a lacrosse reference. Thank you, Casey.
MBG says
number one in my inside the cross pole. Princeton Tigers.
This Auburn fan needs to figure out how to get a win. I feel like I'm John Sumrall because I got a frog in my throat right now. So excuse me for a second.
Let him get a.
There we go.
Get a drink from the cup.
No, I'm good.
A clearing of the throat.
Murray Hitchcock says, so like sometimes I'll be arguing. I love when they start with, so like sometimes I'll be arguing with my wife and I'm just crushing it, right? Facts, logic, a solid understanding of philosophical concepts, etc. It's like the 2002 LSU game. I'm lining up, blowing her off the ball, running power. And then when she creeps up, whoop, I hit her with the play action for another first down. But then she gets mad, like she's never lost a football game before, kind of like an Alabama fan. And because she gets mad, I actually lose. I lose the game. And despite being 37 years old, I've yet to figure this out.
Do you think this guy's still married?
I mean, you know.
The thing that sticks out to me.
He's probably never winning an argument.
Is that he's referring to it as a game. We had some type of discussion on here at one point about we read some board about psychiatry and narcissists and getting inside of people's heads and how to break down this, that, and the other. I'm concerned about this guy. I think we need to call the shrink back in.
I don't know.
I have to go back and find that message board. But this guy's he's playing on another field. I'm not really sure.
The analogy is just perfect.
Do you think his wife's an Alabama fan?
Like, why the mention of Alabama?
Because he's Auburn and they're rent free.
They just
speaking of, what a segue!
Our friend
Chris Marler.
Yeah, our friend at Vern Funquist says crazy stats since 2020. Auburn has as many wins in football and basketball against Alabama as they do head coaches. They have zero wins in football, by the way. That is a crazy stat.
All right, Craig, go ahead and sound off here before I defend Stephen Pearl.
Well, I just think Stephen just needs more time, guys. I mean, like, he's on the bubble. I mean, like, he could actually make the NCAA tournament and just get bounced in the first round. So, like, I just think he needs time. I mean, it was a great example of nepotism. I think it was so great for Bruce to step down and put and give Steven that opportunity. And I just think he needs some more time. So, like, yeah, Rob, like, you know, like, I don't know what you were going to say, but I think Steven's been a great hire. And I think John Cohen just killing it. I'm sure think that Hale State and Stark Vegas are really bummed to see him go. I mean, John is just winning in life.
Okay, here's what I think. Jake Crane said this earlier this week, and I agree with him. I think that Bruce set him up in a bad spot. And Steve's going to somehow become the scapegoat. And because of that, we know that I stand 10 toes down on the fact that we need to be more patient with coaches the board. We absolutely have to be more patient with coaches. I'm going to get to that with Jeff Levy in just a minute as well as we get to our picks. But I think that we're pulling triggers way too quick to appease. Who knows? Like, well, who are we appeasing? I'm all for Brian Kelly getting fired last year at LSU, but That's a great example of somebody where I think that the outside pressure facilitated that move a whole lot faster than what it maybe even needed to be. Look at James Franklin. James Franklin won the offseason. He got out from under the pressure and probably got into a better position. I know it's crazy to say that Virginia Tech could be a better position than Penn State, but it's not the pressure cooker, and you still have plenty of talent in your area to recruit. He stole the entire recruiting class. Somehow ended up there. But what happened to Penn State? They circled the drain for months trying to make a hire. By the way, I think they made potentially the best hire that they could have made anyway. It worked out. It came back around. But did it help them?
Are they going to be better, James though? Franklin?
No. But here's my point. Did it help them in their search to fire James Franklin in the middle of the season? We've gotten so quick to firing coaches. It's not even a two-year window. A couple of years ago, Craig, when you and I started doing this, I was pushing hard for a 3-year window to hang on for coaches and let them kind of get settled, because one portal class is not typically going to do it. Not everybody is going to do what Cignetti did. It's right now, especially, it is such an outlier, and everybody points to them and goes, Oh, Indiana. Until we see that become the norm and the consistent thing, I'm not looking at this. When have we ever looked at one data point that was a complete outlier and it now became the norm and the measuring stick for everything else? That's just ludicrous to use that as a metric. And so when fan bases are getting upset and there's pressure coming in from freaking state governments and everything else on the administration to make moves here or there or everywhere, I think that we move too quickly. And in the case of Stephen Pearl, I don't think that he stepped into a good situation. And I think he needs more time. That's all it is. I don't think he's a bad basketball coach.
Are you saying they're close at Auburn?
He didn't say that.
It sounded like it. Oh my God.
I mean, they have some scores. They have some scores there.
They gave him a 5-year contract.
You can flip basketball faster than you can flip something else.
They gave him a 5-year contract after Bruce left. I literally ChatGPT that. That according the source is Auburn Tiger Athletics, so I trust that source. But John Cohen proves that he's the anti-Kristoff content. Tonight. Yeah,
letting all your sources out of the bag.
Yeah.
All right, it's time to hit one more break. Casey, how you doing? You got a minute to stick around? I have two questions when we come back from this break, and I think that you could weigh in on both of them. This is SEC Sunday night. We're going to pick the Mississippi State schedule with the help of Casey Cregan when we get back. And we have a little last word for you this week on some tasty treats. We'll be right back on SEC Sunday night.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamaduro's Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamaduro's, we're on your team.
ATC is go.
Thank you. Go.
ATC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
FTM is go.
Safety comms is go.
FTU is go.
LRD is go.
FRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
It's SEC Sunday Night, presented by Hewitt Diamaduro's. Visit hdlawsc.com. It's go time.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network and proudly presented by Hewitt Diamaduro's Law, hdlawsc.com. Again, that's hdlawsc.com for all of your personal injury insurance claim, dog bites, stair falls, needs. Tens of millions of dollars for clients. Some of that could be yours today. Go to hdlawsc.com. Okay. Casey, I'm going to let you flip the coin here. You want to do football or food first?
Food. I mean, I don't do sports.
I love it. That's a great. So our friend Memphis Spence quote tweeted this graphic on picking Southern foods. You get to pick one per row. If you're watching right now on X, or if you're watching on YouTube, we would love to hear from you. Go ahead and comment. We'll see if we can't clip this and put it on Instagram and X and YouTube Shorts and all those things as well. This is a discussion worth clipping into a short form content. One Southern food per row. We'll start on the top. Are you taking mac and cheese, barbecue, or fried chicken? Boys, you can only have one. Mac and cheese, barbecue, or fried chicken.
Mm-mm-mm. I'm going with the mac and cheese.
No meat for Casey.
I know. I'm on such a barbecue kick right now. But how do you get rid of mac and cheese? I just don't know how to do
it. Right. Union Wood Shop in Clarkston, Michigan. Andy Staples has shared the recipe. I have the recipe. It is a great mixture of creamy and also dry mac and cheese. It's like, you know, it's like right in that middle consistency. I almost got bleeped here. I almost got bleeped because I almost said something that I shouldn't have said.
It's probably got the breadcrumbs on top, Casey, and the cream on underneath.
You gotcha. All right, I can do
cream,
that.
Yeah. There's a bechamel. Come to my house. I'll make it for you. We'll have lots of good drinks. I'll tell you what I was going to say.
At Smoke on the Water, they used to be in downtown Greenville. One of my favorite spots.
Oh, I love Smoke on the Water. Me too.
You know that close that location?
Yeah. I know.
I'm going mac and cheese all day, though. Yeah.
Supposed to be
allegedly
confirmed.
You're going, what, Craig? Rob? Did you get mac and cheese?
Damn right, I'm going mac and cheese.
No, I'm going barbecue, and I'm going mustard based barbecue because Carolina barbecue is the best. Spence said when he quote tweeted this, and you know what? I should probably tweet at Spence right now. Spence said that it had to be Memphis or Texas barbecue. Spence, you're wrong. I hate to break it to you, but the mustard based. Wow.
Thanks for giving me the topic, and now you're wrong, Spence. Appreciate it. You have failed, sir.
Well, you know, this is a great discussion.
What is the meat for barbecue? What meat are you going with?
Given the rest, I'm going pulled pork. I would love brisket. Brisket's fantastic, and I'm here for the brisket. But day in and day out, if I have to go with one Southern food and that's going to be my staple, that's what I'm rolling with, I'm going mustard-based, pulled pork, I can put it on bread. I can eat it by itself. It's going to work either way. And it's going to just absolutely slap. My mouth is watering thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Living in Detroit, you know what I always caution against? I always am hesitant to get the brisket because more often it seems like Lincoln Riley is cooking it. Mm. It is not juicy. It is too dry. What about you, Case? What are you going for barbecue?
Pulled pork. Rob and I are basically the same person.
Yep. I like that.
Yeah, I literally have a hankering for it, and my poor wife doesn't eat it, so I'm like,
yeah, mine doesn't either.
I need to go away on a work trip or something just so I can get some home team or
come on up, baby. Come on up, baby. Ride on over to Columbia, and we'll take a tour. All right, row number two: cornbread, biscuit, or grits. Going, I know neither of you are going with grits, so just save
I love it. Grits.
Let's just save it.
What is that about, Rob? What is that? Neither of you are going with grits because you grew up in the north.
Well, you're still there, so
yeah.
So I know you're not going. I know you're not going with grits.
Shut your face. I went to Chicken and the Egg the other day. Met one of my fellow athletic directors. Got me a big bowl of grits and enjoyed it, all of it. So, and this is really hard actually, because I love cornbread. Cornbread's one of my favorites, but I'm also a big grits guy. So take you're that, going, Mr. South Carolina.
You're going grits?
I'm going grits.
No way.
Grits, Rob. Yes, I'm going grits.
What are you putting in your grits? This is a good question for you.
Butter. That's it. What am I supposed to put in there? Oh, there we go. Let's call them out. Okay, what did I miss?
Cheese. Bacon, sausage, you put it all in there. Eggs, everything. You everything
do.
In there.
You do put
everything.
It all in there.
If I you're just eating get a big wad of butter.
No. It's you're so missing it.
Of you.
You're missing it. And you know what? As a child, if I was doing instant grits and I didn't have all the trimmings to go in there, I was going a little grape jelly. Okay, a little purple grits. Little purple grits. Getting going.
Grape, get a little sweetness.
Do you do
too?
Grape jelly on your chicken biscuit from Chick-fil-A?
Occasionally.
That was weird to me. Like, so when I was in Atlanta, that was weird to me. Like, I loved the honey on the chicken biscuit. The grape jelly was foreign to me.
I prefer the grape jelly on the sausage biscuit. A little salty, savory with the sweet. Mm. The mix is, it's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Speaking of biscuits, I am going with the biscuit here. I think that a biscuit is, you can't beat a biscuit. There are multiple types of cornbread. There's a lot of ways for us to mess up cornbread.
A lot of ways to mess up a biscuit, too.
It's harder. I'm going
to
go with. I'm
have going you been biscuit. To the Flying Biscuit in Atlanta?
Yes.
I'm going Flying with, Biscuit I'm, is very good. The one in biscuit. Midtown is the one in you, Midtown is one of the best.
Casey, did you pick?
No, I'm going cornbread because it doesn't matter what corn you can mess it up and it's still delicious to me.
It's fair. Yeah. Okay.
I do like the cornbread stuffing at Thanksgiving. You ever do the cornbread stuffing with the sausage? So good.
We do dressing down here.
It goes in the bird, buddy.
In SEC country, we do dressing. It
goes in the bird. Goes in the
all right.
Bird.
All right, look,
this one's not even close.
Correct answer here has been barbecue and a biscuit. And then for dessert, we're either going pecan pie, banana pudding, or cobbler. I believe that's peach cobbler. Could be apple. I think it's peach. So we're going pecan pie, banana pudding, peach cobbler. Casey says that there's an easy answer.
There's only one, Rob. There's only one answer, and it's banana pudding.
Thank
or,
you.
As I like to call it, nana pudding.
Thank you so much.
You both pudding. Have no clue at all, do you? You just have no idea.
Oh, we
no
have clue. A clue. Come get some
you
nana
don't.
Pudding.
You're saying that.
No.
Oh.
It is pecan pie all day, every day, and twice on Sunday with a big old scoop of vanilla bean ice cream. My gosh, where can I get one right now? Because it is all day pecan pie.
It's easily hey Siri. It's easily banana pudding.
No, it's not. Take just your banana pudding and throw it in the garbage said. And just give me the pecan pie.
Also, why are you saying it like that, Craig?
That's the way I say it.
It's you're saying it as if it's spelled like P-A-Y or like there's an accent
long
over
e.
the E.
It's a long E.
No, it's not.
It's a long E. It is. It's pecan pie.
Said, I would understand if you said pecan.
Oh yeah, that
nope. Or pecan.
He's or saying pecan. It like it's P-A-Y, like you're gonna pay off somebody to
there are multiple ways to say this nut. There are so many ways to say this nut, and you've chosen a fourth option that we didn't know existed.
it's like pronouncing Louisville. Is it Louisville? Is it Louisville? Louisville?
All right. Let's pick this schedule really quick. Casey, right. Feel free to chime in here and let us know which one of us you think is right. Craig, every week, our friend Fred at Freezing Cold Takes helps us just deliver up some perfect, what seem to be hot takes, but he'll probably get to circle back and use them as cold takes when we get to the season. A few things here. When we look at the SEC schedule, we're going through one team at a time. Obviously, this is Mississippi State week. And it's an interesting October, which I already noted. But before we get there, week one, Louisiana Monroe, I'm going to give them the win here. I like the offense for Jeff Lebby, and you have Arnett coming back. I think that the defense will be better. I think this is one that they can start the season with a little bit of momentum, get the win there against Monroe. Craig, your thoughts? I'm assuming we can just chalk that up as a win.
Yeah, Casey and I will be on ColorCast for that one. But, yes, that'll be true.
All right, week two, they have Minnesota. Really weird matchup here. Casey, do you have any insights on the Stark Vegas connection to Minnesota, or did we just schedule a Power Four out of conference here?
That's exactly what it is. It's a
check the box.
2017, they did a 5-year deal in 2024 to 2026 or something. Yeah.
Do you think Minnesota's anyone's going to interesting... be like the Gophers coming into town?
It's just an interesting matchup. I don't have a lot of faith in the Gophers as of late, so I'm going to go with the Dogs here. Klanga. Ring that cowbell. 2-0 for Mississippi State. Your thoughts?
Because it's in Davis-Wade, I am saying that is a win for Hail State.
There you go. The next week, they go to South Carolina. We picked that game last week, so I'm going with a win for South Carolina here.
I am, too. That's a win for South Carolina. It means that they the first loss of the year for Mississippi State. And now it gets rough.
All right, week four, Missouri. I'm high on Missouri this year. We're not going to obviously give away too much. But I love Austin Simmons and Drink Together. I'm going with the win for MIZ, which is a loss for Hail State.
Yeah, I think Mississippi State's going to be one of those teams that are going to be adversely affected by the 9-game schedule. You look at Missouri, that's going to be another climber within the SEC, taking Mizzou to win, Hail State to lose.
All right, now the previously mentioned October stretch. Casey, in the month of October, Mississippi State plays Alabama, at LSU, Oklahoma, and at Texas. Of those four, which one are they most likely to win? Again, that's Bama, LSU, Oklahoma, Texas. If you had to roll the dice on one.
Gun to head, I don't know why, but Oklahoma.
Yeah, Oklahoma's at Davis-Wade.
And there's some unknown at Alabama quarterback, isn't there not? Or am I making
there
that
is.
Up?
I'll speak on this, Craig, because I think that I know what we can do here, and I want to package this month together because am I safe to assume you have them losing all four of those games?
You are correct, sir.
Okay. I don't think we need to go through it game by game, really break it down, but I have them actually upsetting Oklahoma because, like last year, I'm going to stand firmly in that I believe they will bite somebody. And I have question marks when it comes to this offense at Oklahoma. That game is in week 8. What is the health of the key players on the offensive side of the ball in Norman? Can Mateer be consistent and healthy by week 8? Last year we saw this middle stretch of the year where he was really banged up. We had the thumb surgery. If they don't balance things out and he carries the brunt of the rushing attack again, he's going to get beat up again. It just is what it is. This is the SEC in college football. You're not going to make it through that running the ball that many times as a quarterback. Casey mentioned Alabama's quarterback situation. We'll obviously talk about this when we get to Alabama, but we have a little while before we get there, so I'll say this now. I absolutely freaking love Keelan Russell. I think he is a stud. I think that his mentality and his approach to the game is insane. I think that the natural tools that Bryce Underwood have is what catapulted him above Keelan Russell. A couple years ago in those final rankings. And so Bryce Underwood got all the attention, not to mention he was a big-time flip, and there was a lot of noise around him. But Keelan Russell, I think, could have come in and helped Alabama last year, but then Ty Simpson became so consistent, right? He really elevated, and Ty has worked his way into what looks like the number two quarterback spot in the NFL draft. And so props and kudos to him. I didn't think that was going to happen, but I will continue to ride for Keelan Russell until proven otherwise. Obviously, Austin Mack has been in this system with Grubb and DeBoer for a while, coming over from Washington. I don't think that'll be a problem for them against Hale State. So the one game,
you know what song's winning, coming out that week, right?
Of what, when we do song? Alabama?
Yeah. Return of the Mac.
Oh, I love that. Look at that. Look at that. Just as another brief,
our five listeners left.
Another brief update as Craig continues to serenade us. Top of the eighth. It is now 5-1. Sacramento State over LSU. South Carolina's Ethan Lazama just hit a grand slam, and it's 12-1 in the bottom of the fifth against Princeton. Okay.
Take that, Tigers.
Let's get out of here with the rest of this schedule. Vanderbilt, week 10, going to Stark Vegas. I think Mississippi State wins this game.
That's a win.
Okay, we agree. Not high on the doors. We'll get to that in a couple of weeks. Auburn. I have Auburn as a loss. Auburn's really interesting to me because I love Byron Brown coming in with Golish, and I think that's going to be enough to make that offense click against the bottom half of the SEC when they have those matchups. Now, this is in Starkville and not in Jordan-Hare, so it makes it a little more of a question mark. But I have Auburn winning that game as a loss for Mississippi State. Casey shaking his head. What are your thoughts?
I don't think it's that big of a home field advantage. I know when the cowbells are clanking, I get it. I've been there when it's loud. I've been there when nobody's been there as well. I don't know if it's as, other than the cowbells. And once you get them down, those cowbells stop.
Well, I was more making reference to not being in Jordan-Hare. Because if it was there, I would for sure.
I know
sure,
Craig I said would, it before too. But
I would for sure pick Auburn if it was on the plains, and I'm still picking them here. I was more referencing the home field advantage Auburn would have if it was there, giving my
nod. The house of horrors over there.
Well, it just gets weird, and it hasn't gotten weird there in a few years, and we're about to stop saying that in the house of horrors.
I will never stop saying
you
that.
You continue to. Lack a syllable when you say that word. Okay.
I've never completed a full game in attendance at Jordan-Hare.
Well,
all right. Next one.
Texas.
By the way, listen to this week's MBG podcast for more on that story.
Tennessee Tech. I'm going with a win. Yeah. A win for you as well. Tennessee Tech.
Yeah.
And then the Egg Bowl is in Oxford. And I think we're going to have a really interesting discussion about Ole Miss coming up when we get to them at the end of this whole thing. So we got a little while before we get there, but I don't think it's going to be interesting enough to say that I'm going to pick Mississippi State to beat them. So I think that's a win for the Rebels at home. Craig, I have them at 5-7. I think you
I
have them
at 3-9.
You have them at 3-9. You know, I'm looking at your sheet right now, and I do have a big question for you before we close the show.
Absolutely.
Week one, according to the graph here, the spreadsheet, you have them losing to Louisiana Monroe, and I really just keyed you up to knock that hot take out of the park, but I'm guessing it was a typo because you said that they were going to win that game on the air here.
That was a typo.
So
that was that.
Clean up your
that
sheet.
Was a total...
clean up
my
your
sheet.
Sheet, Craig.
4-8.
Make sure all your make sure your sheet is clean for next week. All righty,
pecan pie.
Pecan. Grab your pecan pie with a little vanilla bean ice cream. Then you put some caramel sauce on top. Oh, my God. It's so good. You warm up the pecan pie. Take that. You're not warming up your banana pudding and just curdle all over the place. You put those vanilla wafers on top, too.
Ugh, for Craig
they're
and Michael.
In it.
Those are gross.
Did I freeze?
You did. Now you're back.
I just gave a whole outro. This is SEC Sunday Night live on the Chief Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law. Thanks again to Paul Jones, to our good friend and esteemed producer of the Message Board Genius Podcast, Casey Cregan, for being back with us. For Craig McMichael, I am Rob Williams. This is SEC Sunday Night. We'll see you next week.